This guy right here looks a little crazy, doesn't he? He looks like he might be a little bit on the wild side. This is Timothy Treadwell. And it was about 10 years ago that this young man right here referred to the Alaskan grizzly brown bear as harmless. Timothy spent 11 years there in Alaska. Every single summer he would go there to Alaska to spend time with a brown bear, like it's a family member or something. And not just time, but he didn't just take some shots, you know, and try to get a little close and get a picture, but he actually got up there with them, living with them, touching them, singing to them, and doing all kinds of things. And so for 11 years he did this. The 12th summer that he went to do this, things didn't go just right. He had been there all summer, and as always at the end of the summer, the guy who would drop him off would also come back to pick him up. And he was considered an expert after all. He'd been there 11 years. And so the guy was coming back to pick him up after this 12th summer that he had spent with the bears. And as he was approaching, he witnessed a mauling. He saw this terrible bear attack. And he got on the radio and radioed the park rangers. And the park rangers got there as quick as they possibly could. And they put 12 shots in a very aggressive male brown bear, killing that bear. It took 12 shots to bring that thing down. And unfortunately, they were just a little bit too late, and Timothy and his wife, he had his wife there with him doing this, both of them were killed. Well, they get their bodies, and they're going to load them up, trying to load them up on the helicopter to transport them out of there. And even as they're doing that, there's another brown bear that comes out and attacks them, and they have to put him down as well. And so Timothy lost his life here in this accident. And what a terrible thing that it was that it took Timothy his whole life to learn something at his death that he should have really learned in his life. Timothy had written a book. And you can find this if you want to look it up. It's interesting. I've read just bits and pieces. But the book is called Among Grizzlies, Living Among the Brown Bears. And in this book, he talks all about his experiences with these bears. And he even talks about how there's one, and there's video, by the way, of this. And in one of the videos, it has him with the sow and two cubs, and he's on all fours crawling around with them. He was actually able to touch them, and he even talked about singing to them. And so just very, very unusual. One time, he was on David Letterman a number of years ago. And, of course, David Letterman is asking him questions concerning this. And this is what he says, and I quote, concerning the bears. He says, "Those brown bears in Alaska are pretty much harmless party animals," is how he referred to them. One expert said before his death, and I quote, "At best, he is misguided. At worst, he's dangerous. If he models unsafe behavior, that puts other visitors, not only himself at risk, but other visitors and the bears at risk as well." Very prophetic after seeing what happened to him. You know, do you think there was a time in Timothy's life where he approached the brown bear, the great grizzly, and saw danger? Do you think there was a time where he approached the brown bear and saw a threat, saw something that was very dangerous, very vicious, very deadly? I'm thinking probably so. If you look at the size of these bears and you know their history, probably so. What changed? What in the world changed between probably approaching this bear back years ago and seeing it in all of its strength and all of its might and how dangerous it is to crawling around, touching them, living with them, singing to them? What changed? Do you think that 12 years of living among these bears would change one's perspective and awareness? Do you think so? I believe so. In the passage that we read in Genesis 18 and 19, God, through a couple of angels, is telling Lot to escape for your life with an exclamation point, escape for your life. You know, going back to Timothy, there was experts, by the way, that was telling Timothy all along, "You're crazy. You've got to stop doing this. You've got to stop getting in there with it. These bears are dangerous, and if you don't stop doing this, you're going to endanger yourself. You're going to lose your life. Possibly somebody else is going to get hurt as well." There was people there warning Timothy all along. Here in our passage, we have God and His angels warning Lot, escape for your life. All right, well, what exactly are they talking about? Well, first of all, let's look at what God has tried to tell us from the very beginning of time concerning sin. What has God tried to tell us from the very, very first time, the very first book in the Bible concerning sin? Genesis chapter 3, we have Adam and Eve, the first man and woman. We see the relationship that they have with God is very different than the relationship that we have and that we share. It was a very, very special relationship, very intimate relationship as they would walk and talk with God in the garden. But because of sin, that relationship was severed. Because of sin, that relationship completely changed. Because of sin, they had to leave paradise, this garden. Because of sin, they could not eat of the tree of life and could not live forever. Because of sin, physical death came into the world. Because of sin, spiritual death also came into the world. Because of sin, man had to start working as one of the punishments. Because of sin, women would be in great pain, and ever since then have been in great pain, giving child in childbirth. What has God tried to tell us about sin from the beginning? Well, then you flip over to Genesis chapter 6, just a few chapters later, and we see there that the whole world is consumed by sin. In Genesis chapter 6, verse 5 and 6, talks about God looking about and seeing wickedness everywhere on the earth. Everybody is wicked. And he talks about how the thought of man is on evil continuously. And so because of that, what does he do? Destroys everybody except for 8 people. Everybody in the entire world was killed and destroyed except for 8. What is God trying to tell us about sin? And then you get to Genesis chapter 19, which is our text. About 400 years later after God, just 400 years really is not that long when you think about what's going on here. After God had destroyed the entire world, about 400 years later, here he is about to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, about to completely wipe 2 cities off the face of the earth. Why? Why? Because sin is deadly. Because sin is dangerous. That's why. This is a very familiar scene, very terrible scene. We've all seen pictures of this. We've all seen videos. We all have heard different testimonies concerning this back in September 2001 and the terrible tragedy that happened then with the trade towers being hit by terrorists. You know, after hearing those testimonies, if you remember back that many years ago, I heard testimonies of so many who were so frightened because they didn't know what was going on. All they knew is that there was fire around them. Well, I heard testimonies about some running through stairwells in darkness, feeling the heat of the fire, running through the fire. The building is crumbling. There's concrete and steel that are falling. There's people dying all around them, and they're trying their best to do what? To escape. To get out. Anything. And unfortunately, there were so many who did not make it out. So many perished here in this great tragedy. Now, just imagine this for just a moment. What if there was somebody, and we know that this is not going to happen, and that's the point, but what if there was somebody there in one of these buildings when this tragedy happened, and what if they were just sitting there, and here is everybody running around, and they're saying, hey, what's going on? You know, what's the big deal? It's just, you know, a little fire, a little warming of the fire, just a little shaking of the building. Yeah, somebody just died there and there, but what's the big deal? Why is everybody running? That's foolish, isn't it? We know that that is foolish. We know that nobody, and here's in their right mind, would do something like that. No, they were trying to get out. They were trying to save their life. Now, why is it, brethren, that we can get so comfortable and we can get so close to something that is so deadly as sin? Why is it that we can allow something in our life and let it become a part of our life that is so deadly, so devastating to our soul, which is, by the way, the most important thing? How in the world can we get so comfortable around something like that. I'm convinced we don't see the seriousness of it, or I don't believe we would get that comfortable with it. Sin gets comfortable. Why in the world, if this city was so terrible, was so awful, that God's going to completely destroy both of these cities? Think about the people, and we talked about this in class a little bit earlier. Think about all the children. Think about all the people that are about to perish here. Why in the world, if God is about to destroy these cities, if they're that wicked, what in the world is Lot doing there? You ever ask yourself that? What in the world is Lot doing there? And if the city is so wicked and so terrible, what in the world is Lot doing living there? It's not like he's just there. He's living there. He's raising a family there. What in the world is Lot thinking? Now, just a little bit ago, we looked at the very last of this account, this story, about Lot and the angel saying, "Escape for your life, get out." Now I want us to go back and let's see, why is he there to begin with? Because that's the question I have. What in the world are you doing there to begin with? So we go to Genesis chapter 13. And so we'll start at the beginning and we'll work our way to that point. Genesis chapter 13. There we see Lot, and this is Abraham's nephew. Abraham is the one that God, of course, in Genesis chapter 12 has come to and said, "I'm going to make a covenant with you and I'm going to bless you and I want you to get out of your land of Hebron and I want you to go to this land, a land that I'm going to promise you and to your descendants." And so he does just that. And Abram gets out and he carries with him who? Sarah, his wife, and Lot, his nephew. Now his brother is gone at this point. And so he's really in a way, in a sense, a father to Lot. And so he's looking after Lot, he's taking care of Lot, and Lot and him are traveling together. And by the way, they're very prosperous. And I've got to say, the reason why they're prosperous is because God has blessed them. Mainly because God has blessed Abraham. And so they have money. They have a lot of animals, and that equals money in that time. They have a lot of animals, and because of that, they have a lot of servants. They have a lot of hired hands. They have a lot of people that are traveling with them. And in Genesis chapter 13, we read about a little incident here. We read about how their hired hands, their herdsmen, they're not getting along too well in Genesis chapter 13, starting with verse 8. It says, "So Abram said to Lot, 'Please let there be no strife between you and I, nor between my brethren and my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we be brethren or brothers.'" We see somewhat the nature of Abraham right here. What a wonderful guy he was. He says, "We're brethren. We're brothers. I don't want there to be any kind of strife in any kind of situation." So here's his solution, verse 9. "Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me, and if you go to the left, then I will go to the right, and if you go to the right, then I will go to the left." And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw all the valley of the Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go to Zoar. So Lot chose for himself the valley of the Jordan. Now just stop right there for just a second. Now we start seeing Lot's character just a little bit here. We see Abraham and what a generous and what a kind and what a wonderful man he is. And here Abraham is and he's saying, "Lot, my nephew, kind of like a son, you pick your land." And then we see what kind of man Lot is. You know, Lot is kind of in a sense the tag along. And what Lot should have done is say, "Well, Uncle Abe, you know, I appreciate everything that you've done for me. I appreciate you helping me out. You're like a father to me, and you have helped me out, got me started. And if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be where I am today. Please, I insist, you pick the land, and I will take the land that you don't want." We don't see that. What we see here is a very selfish man. He looks around and he's, "Oh boy, this land over here, man, it's green, just perfect for my sheep to graze, and that's what I want." See, brethren, sin, even the smallest sin, is ugly. Is selfishness a sin? Oh yeah. But it's not one of those that we really think about all that often. We see from the very beginning here, Lot and his character, And we see from the very beginning that Lot is allowing sin into his life. Now, it might be in what we consider a very insignificant way. It's not some big sin that we would consider, but nevertheless, sin is sin, and he is allowing that in his life. And he's saying, oh man, I've got the choice of any land I want, and I see this green, lush land, and that's the land I want. I'm going to take it for, as it says here, for myself. Selfish. Verse 12, Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled in the cities of the valley and moved his tents towards Sodom. Some translations say something a little bit different, towards Sodom. Now get the picture in your head. Here they are. I want you to pick the land, Lot, whichever one you want. And so Lot stands there and he looks around him and he sees towards Sodom, and between him and Sodom, he sees a beautiful, lush land. And he says, that's the one that I want. But Lot, look at verse 13. Aren't the men there wicked? You're going to go around Sodom and around that city, and the men, the people there in that city are wicked, every one of them. Lot, can't you see that? Can't you see how wicked these men are? Oh, I'm not going. I can just almost hear them now. It's not recorded in the Bible, but you could just almost hear the conversation. Well, I'm not going to Sodom. You know, I'm not going to live in the city. There's no way. Is that what you thought? No. No, that's a wicked city. There's no way I'm going to live. I'm going to live on the outskirts. I'm going to put my tent. Notice that. I'm going to put my tent there. Tent is a temporary structure. I'm going to put my temporary structure in that beautiful valley, Jordan Valley. I'm not going to go in Sodom. Look at Genesis 14. Genesis chapter 14. Where in the world does he end up? In Genesis chapter 14, we see there, and we don't have time really to develop this whole story here, and you can read this for yourself, but Sodom and Gomorrah are about to be taken, overthrown by the kings of Babylon. And so here they come in, and when they come in, they start taking people. They're taking over the city, and they start taking people captive, and they come to Lot, and they also take Lot. And where do they find Lot? Where do they find Lot? Look at 14:11-12. 11 and 12. Then they took all the goods. These are these kings that are taken over. Then they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their food supply and departed. And they also took Lot, Abram's nephew, and his possessions and departed, for he was, what? Living in Sodom. What? What's he doing there? I thought you, wait a minute, Lot's a good guy. Sodom's full of wickedness and full of bad people. What in the world is Lot doing here in the city? Now turn to chapter 19, if you will. Chapter 19 is the situation where God has already decided to destroy both of these cities because of their great wickedness. You've already had the bargaining, if you want to call it, between God and Abraham pleading with God to spare. If you find this many people, will you spare the city? If you find this many people, down to 10, I believe. If you find 10 righteous people, will you spare the city? Not able to do it. Can you imagine? Well, we think it's wicked around us today in America and where we live. Could not find anybody there. And so look here. God's decided to destroy the city, but he's going to spare Lot. And so here the angels are coming to get Lot out. Chapter 19, verse 1 and 2. Now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening as Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. And there was a lot of wicked men that also sat in the gate of Sodom. What's he doing there? When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. Verse 2, and he said, now behold, my lords, please turn aside into your servant's house and spend the night. Wash your feet, and then you will rise early and go your way. And they said, however, no, but we shall spend the night in the square. No, we don't want to impose. We're just going to stay over here in the square. And he doesn't want them to do that. Do you remember why? He knows how wicked the city is. The city is so wicked that he knows the men of the city are going to sexually molest them if they were to stay out there after dark. Now that's wicked. That's terrible. And so he's begging and pleading, verse 3, yet he urged them strongly. You can just see him pleading with them. So they turned aside to him and entered his house, and he prepared a feast for them and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. Lot is still somewhat of a good guy. You know, he's trying to spare their lives. And notice there, where does he give them shelter? in his house. Lot, which way do you want to go in life? Lot, our company is too big and we've prospered and our guys, they're just not getting along, and so why don't we split and you go this way or that way and I'll go the opposite way. Which way do you want to go in life? I think I'm going to take this land over here. Oh, it's a beautiful land. It's a gorgeous land. It's a rich land, but I'm not going to go to Sodom. No, it's wicked. There's no way I'm going to go there. And then when the angels come to get him, where is he living? In Sodom. He's living in Sodom. It talks about getting his goods. He's got his goods there. He's got not a tent, a temporary structure, a house, a permanent structure. And what's worse, and we'll talk about this here in just a moment, he's raising his family here in this wicked city. Now, what in the world happened? What in the world happened? I thought you were just going over here and you just kind of be on the outskirts and now you're actually living in the city, Lot. What's going on? Brethren, sin becomes comfortable. That's all I can say. Sin becomes comfortable. How often do we try, I don't know if it's just for the sake of the thrill, but how often do we try to get just as close to sin as we possibly can? And now we're not going to get in it. That's wrong. That's sin. I'm not going to do it, but you know, I am kind of curious about it. I wouldn't mind just kind of seeing what it's like just a little bit and kind of peeking over there and just curious about how often do we do that? And when we do that, how often do we stay away from that sin? It doesn't work that way. Sin doesn't work like that. Let me tell you, you will not see someone who is a faithful member of the Lord's church that is sound and solid in the faith, you will not see them go from that to living in sin overnight. It doesn't happen, I guarantee you. Because it is by nature that we so slowly drift into sin. And before you know it, we're living that way, and it is a part of our life. Now, this is a Bible example, and it's a wonderful example, wonderful account in God's Word, but that's not what we're just looking at here. What I'm trying to get you to think about is, what direction are you headed in your life? What direction was Lot headed? Well, he's headed in the wrong direction to begin with, and so he slowly found his way in to a very, very sinful place. What direction are you headed in your life? Some people might say, well, you know, most of the time I'm on track. Every now and then I get off. It don't work that way. We all sin, but let me tell you, if you're trying to live a faithful life, you don't get off track when you sin. You stay on track and you get a little bit of repair work done because the blood of Jesus Christ is cleansing you from that sin. You don't get off track and on track at the same time. Do you see a train that's on track and off track at the same time? It doesn't happen. Where are you at in your life? Look, I guarantee you there was a time when Lot would have said, there's no way I'm going to live in that city. I'm going to get close to it. I might go there and bargain and sell and trade and buy and whatever, and I'm going to live outside the city. I'm going to let my animals graze, but there's no way you're going to find me in that wicked city. And where was Lot found? There in the city. That's how sin works. Sin, by its very nature, is progressive. Brethren, if you let sin, and I'm talking about insignificant sin here, what we consider that, because those big sins, boy, we know about them, and we stay away. I'm talking about sin especially that we seem to think is insignificant. We let it in. We let it into our heart, and at first we don't like it, and we feel a little bit uncomfortable, but guess what? If you keep on doing it, it gets a little comfortable. If you keep on doing it, then it's easy to do it again and again. You know, if I were to ask you what your favorite book in the Bible was, a lot of people in here would probably say Psalms, because Psalm is just a wonderful book full of great wisdom. And it's just such a great book. It's the longest book in the Bible, unless I'm mistaken. 150 chapters. How does it start? This great book, 150 chapters, look at the very first verse of it. Psalm 1:1. Notice sin's progressive nature, and that's what I want you to look at here. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. Now that can mean a few different things, but when I look at that, I look at the progressive nature of sin. I look at kind of somewhat of a movement here. You know, sin starts off by just kind of a walking by and glancing, doesn't it? Does it not? I'm curious. You know, I'm curious. I'm not. There's no way I'm going to commit that. There's no way I'm going to actually get into that because it's wrong, and I wouldn't do that. But you know what? It looks kind of interesting. Looks like a little bit of fun. Kind of walk by, look at it. And then we begin to stand there in the path of sinners. In other words, we give in to that sin and we commit that sin. And, hey, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. You know, it's really not all that bad after all. In fact, I kind of liked it. Then what happens? You sit in the seat of the scornful. Do you know what scornful means? This is someone who mocks and scoffs at sin. This is someone, brethren, this is what we see in our country all around us today. This is where we are as a nation. We kick back and you look at all the different television shows, not all of them, but you look at so many of them, and what do they say? They laugh at sin. Oh, you Bible thumpers, y'all are so traditional. What are you talking about, living with somebody? Well, don't you need to live with somebody before they're married? Because after all, if it doesn't work out, you know beforehand. That's just one example. Y'all Christians are so old-fashioned, aren't you? Scoffing at sin. That's where we are today. And that's how it's so easily to get into that kind of position, brethren. So easy to get there. Why in the world would a Christian go into a bar? I've dealt with this some with some friends throughout the years. Why in the world would a Christian go into a bar? Well, hey, I'm not going to drink. I don't do that. You know, I'm not going to do anything wrong. I'm going there because some of my friends from work are going there, and all we're going to do is sit around and have a good time and just laugh and talk, and I'm not going to do anything wrong. Before you know it, you're having that drink. Oh, it's just a little social drink. Is there anything wrong with that? Before you know it, you're meeting somebody that seems like they're such a nice person, but boy, they're carrying a whole lot of baggage. And inside, they're not the type of person that you really need to be with. That's how it works. It's progressive in nature. There might be some sins that you need to escape in your life. There might be some sins that you've allowed in maybe years ago into your life, and they're comfortable now. You've gotten used to them. Look at Genesis chapter 19. Is it easy to get away from sin? When it becomes a habit in your life, no matter what kind of sin it is it easy to get out of it? Well, let's look. Is it easy for Lot to get out of this sinful city here? Let's look at that passage. 19 verse 15. Said, when morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, up and take your wife and your two daughters who are here, or you will be swept away in the punishment of the city. But he hesitated. So the man seized his hand and the hand of his wife and the hands of his two daughters, for the compassion of the Lord was upon him, and they brought him out and put him outside the city. And when they brought them outside, one said, escape for your life. Do not look behind you and do not stay anywhere in the valley. Escape to the mountains or you will be swept away. Picture that. Put that in your mind. Here Lot is and he is living here in Sodom, and the two angels come to his house and said, okay, it's time to go. It's time to get out of here. God's about to destroy this city, about to wipe it off the face of the earth. It's time to go. Hey, what's the hurry? I mean, good grief, calm down a little bit. Let's talk about this. I want to make sure I've got the details right. I want to make sure everything. Let's talk about this. In fact, sit down and I'll get you some tea or something. Hey, I've lived here for a long time. I've got a lot of goods, a lot of things. You think I want to leave all this stuff behind? I've got some packing to do. It's going to take me a couple days. It says he hesitated. The city's going to be destroyed, Lot. Wait a minute. I think this is almost comical. They seize him. Picture this. The angels seize him, his wife, and his two daughters by the hands, and I think they drag them out. Because it says here that they take him by the hands and then they put him outside the city. They put him down. Is it hard to get away from? Did they have to drag Lot out of the city? Brethren, sin is hard to get out of once you get in it. There are so many sins that are so easy to get into that we don't really consider sin, but we know deep down inside they are. And it's hard, hard to get out of. It's dangerous. It's deadly. It's detrimental to your soul. When I'm in sin, I'm not just hurting myself. My life, I'll do whatever I want to. You ever heard that before? Let me tell you what, if you're in sin, if you're in a place, in a situation, in a place that you don't supposed to be in a situation you don't supposed to be in, guess what? You're not just hurting yourself because somebody else sees you. And you might not know it, but you're hurting somebody else as well. Look here in this passage, verse 14. And we see here that Lot's not just hurting himself by living here in this sinful city. But it says here that Lot's finally convinced, I guess. And he says, Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law who were to marry his daughters and said, up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city. But he appears to his sons-in-law to be jesting. He's joking. What, are you crazy? Who's going to destroy the city? Nobody going to destroy this city. Lot had so much to lose. We talk about Lot's wife and how she turned around and she turned into a pillar of salt and how terrible that was, and certainly it was. You know, if I look at this passage here, and really if you look at verses 12 through 14, Lot had a lot more to lose than that. I see here that Lot had left behind about two daughters, it looks like, two son-in-laws and sons as well, if you look at verse 12. Why? He lost it all. Why? Because of sin. Because of sin. He lost everything. You know, that's an awesome sight. Brethren, sin is so horrible, so destructive, so deadly that it can make something like this look like a little teddy bear. Sin will destroy your life, and it's not until we come to terms with that. It's not until we see sin for what it truly is that we'll face the truth that is in front of us, that we'll wake up and say, hey, how in the world did I get here? You ever done that? How in the world did I get here? We drift. That's how it works. We've got to see it for what it is. We get into it. We get comfortable. Verse 16 here, it says, he hesitated. Get out for your life. He hesitated. Brethren, if you took it for, if two angels came to your house and said, get out or it's going to be destroyed, would you say, hey, hang on, I think I'm going to hang out a little bit? Why did he not run for his life? I'll tell you why. He did not see the danger. He didn't see the danger. He believed it, but he didn't see it. That's exactly how sin is. We can see sin, we believe in it, but we don't see the danger. Why else would we live in it? How many of our own brethren live in sin and we don't say anything about it? Got to see it for what it is. Got to make our decision. Am I going to walk with God or am I going to walk with the world? Look at Hebrews chapter 2 and we'll conclude. Hebrews 2, and I think this goes very well with this passage. Therefore, we must give the more earnest heed to the things that we've heard, lest we drift away. For if the word spoken through the angels proved steadfast in every transgression and disobedience received a just reward, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? How in the world? He talks about drifting away there. Brethren, that's how sin works. We drift into it and we get comfortable with it. Don't let it happen. And he says, how can we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? And the answer to that is, there is no escape. If you neglect the salvation that Jesus Christ, that God offers through His Son and through His Son's blood, there is no escape. We're kind of like Timothy Treadwell, just laying there underneath the bear. Oh, he ain't going to do nothing to me. I'll tell you what, there were some pictures I wanted to put up there that showed him about half eaten. And I thought, that probably wouldn't be appropriate, but it kind of would be. Shows just how deadly they were. Are you living in sin this morning? It might be that you are a child of God, you're already a Christian, you come to worship every Sunday, maybe you come to Bible class every Wednesday, and you're just really a good person, but there's some sin that maybe only you and God knows about, and you've let it into you, to your life, you've drifted into sin, and it's become just really comfortable. It's still sin. Turn from it. Repent. Come forward. There's no shame in that if you need to, and we'll pray for you. If you've neglected the salvation offered to you through God's Son, Jesus Christ, won't you render obedience to the gospel? Won't you become His child while we stand and sing?